Welcome back, folks. Episode 37, Get a Grip on Lighting. On today's show, we have Gayatri Unnikrishnan. She is one of the directors of standard development at the Well Building Institute. And we talked to her a little bit about how the indoor environment can be made more healthy with good lighting systems. It was a great show. Listen to it. Now, I want to tell you guys real quickly. Do you know what the internet is? Good. Then go to a website called YouTube, type in Get a Grip on Lighting, and subscribe to our YouTube channel, please, because we really need some help to get some fancy stuff with YouTube if we get 100 subscribers. So please go there and do that. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Lumax Lighting. Go to LumaxLighting.com, baby, LumaxLighting.com. Hey, Greggy, what is Matt going to throw up on the screen there for us to talk about today?
Well, he's going to put up the CNR LED fixture, which is an aisle light fixture. But before we dive into that, just on Lumax in general, what I really like about them is that they're not a cookie cutter company. They're not bringing out every fixture that everyone else has. They're taking it and making custom fixtures for specific applications. And that's really what you need today in the LED lighting world. So I love them for that. But in terms of this specific fixture, here's another application where I can't tell you how many times I go into a facility and they have the lighting. First of all, maybe not over an aisle when they need aisle lighting, and they might have it right over the rack where it's not doing anything, or they have it the wrong fixture there where it's a widespread lens and it's shooting the light out where it doesn't need to be. The CNR LED fixture actually drives the light down to the ground and off the sides on the shelves where you need the light. So make sure you pick the right light for the right application, and Lumax does a great job of that.
Yeah, you know, whenever I go to that Lumax website, they just have so many different fixtures for so many different applications. They really are good like that. And when it comes to rack aisles, folks, come on, man. You don't use the same fixture in the rack aisle that you use in the crosstalk or the open area. That's lighting 101 basics. Come on, man. And don't put the fixture on top of the rack. In fact, do your lighting upgrade after the racks are in so you can put the light right in the middle of the rack. Come on, man. So this episode of the podcast and every episode of the podcast on the GetAGripOnLighting.com website is brought to you by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, Greg, NAILD.org for information on joining this association, on information on what else, LS1, LS2, our magazine, all the stuff that Nail puts out. But for right now, we're going to get into the Well Building Standard a bit and Gayatri Unnikrishnan, episode 37, Get a Grip on Lighting. Welcome to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast, Gayatri.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Say hello to Greg Eric.
Hi, Greg. Hi, Michael.
Hi. Hi. Thanks for being here.
So tell us a little bit about the Well Building. Is it the Well Building Standard and how it relates to lighting?
So the Well Building Standard, as we call it, but we refer to it as a rating system, is a set of requirements or features that we think is important to have a healthy building. It's based upon about 7 years of research. We visited the evidence and we saw that people spend 90% of the time indoors, but the indoor spaces are not the most healthy. And humans have evolved to live outdoors and to have in fresh air, to drink clean water, to have light as per the sunrise and sunset. So these are things that we are not getting in our daily lives when we are spending our time indoors. So the Well Building Standard aims to hit upon a few features, a few important aspects of what a building should be to have healthy occupants. So we touch upon concepts. We have about 10 concepts. One is air, then we have water, nourishment, movement, light, acoustics, thermal comfort, mind, community, and materials. So we've bucketed the requirements into each of these concepts. These concepts address different fields. They address different professionals. And we bringing them all together, we have the Well Building Standard.
So it's like BOMA Best or LEED certified for a healthy building.
Kind of, yeah.
Okay. I noticed in your LinkedIn profile, because I went to see it before we for the show, I noticed that you listed yourself at a former job as a lighting engineer. Now, I've been quoted as saying on this show that there is no such thing as lighting engineers.
Mm-hmm.
Is that a real certification, or is that something that you just thought, you know, gosh, I'm an electrical engineer, but I really know a lot about lighting, so I'm a lighting engineer, or is that a certification provided by a accredited institution?
So that's an interesting topic you touch upon. My bachelor's is in electrical engineering. My master's is in architectural lighting design. Two of my jobs, the position that was given to me was lighting engineer, which is, in all honesty, like you mentioned, I don't quite know where it came from, but since that was a position that was given to me, is how that's why I recorded in LinkedIn for full transparency. But like you said, does lighting engineer mean that you're looking at the optics? Does it mean that we're looking at the physics? So you'll have to ask my previous bosses
Okay.
or HR
Well,
departments.
now that we've cleared that up, that I'm still right that there's no such thing as a lighting engineer.
You might be right, yeah.
I might be right. We I almost was
I
clear.
will connect you. I'll connect you to my previous HR
All
departments, and
right,
I would be
cool.
happy to listen in on that.
So maybe it's a title at that particular institution or job.
Yes.
So the WELL building standard, when you're looking at it from a lighting perspective, what are the key factors that are involved in a building that meets the WELL building standard from a lighting perspective?
So there are a bunch of things, as you may have noticed. The first is you need to be able to see. So the basic requirement, you would be surprised. One of the main things that I think people should take into account is the ages of the occupants in the buildings. Right now we have three generations of occupants living in or living and working in the same building. We have adolescents or people under the age of 25. We have 25 to 45, and we do have evidence that shows that macular degeneration starts taking place around the age of 45, and you need more lighting support. So we have different age groups there, and so just making sure that the visual requirements of those age groups are met is important. The second is circadian lighting, or the understanding the non-visual impacts of light, and making sure that it is hit, it is understood, and it has been taken into account. You'll notice that from WELL version 1 to WELL version 2, we have removed circadian lighting with electric lighting as an optimization, as a precondition to an optimization. This means that for projects pursuing the first version of WELL, they needed to meet the circadian lighting precondition. They needed to meet the light levels mentioned in that feature to become WELL certified. In version 2, you either have good daylight or you have to meet the circadian lighting precondition. So that brings us to the third point, which is access to daylight. Now, access to daylight, this can be either in the form of having windows or providing access to occupants to break rooms, to rooms where they can just go and hang out for an hour or so, that have great windows that provide them with that exposure that they need. We have evidence that shows that exposure to daylight has an impact on your mental health as well. So that's something to take into account. We also talk a little bit about flicker, about glare. Glare has been associated with migraines, with headaches. It's something that we need to talk about. So that's been addressed as well. And there's a little bit about occupant control, and us providing supplemental lighting for those who need it. But my favorite bit about in the entire lighting feature is not about lighting. It's about education. We know that even if you provide the perfect building with great design, if people don't understand what each design intervention is for, what they can take from the design intervention and apply to their personal lives, we can't make a huge impact. So there is this little educational element in the lighting section that I'm hoping will make a huge impact in people's lives and in their families' lives as well.
So
Now,
we
who
go
founded the
ahead.
institute? I'm sorry, I want to dive in a little bit more on the
Okay.
background, but who founded the
Sure.
institute?
So the institute was founded by Pete and Paul Schaller. They're working at McKinsey. They're the youngest, no, sorry, not McKinsey, Goldman Sachs. They were the youngest partners at Goldman Sachs, the twins. And they found that there's a huge gap in the market. All this evidence exists, and people are not doing anything about it. So they gathered a group of practitioners, of researchers, of experts, and they started revisiting what needs to be done to make a building well, what needs to be done to make a building healthy, especially since we're spending so much time indoors. So while they were working, so you can imagine their very hectic jobs, they were also exploring what can be done with all this information. And that's how the WELL Building Standard came to be in 2014.
Okay. So we have done two podcasts on Flickr, LED Flickr, one with Dr. Arnold Wilkins in Britain, and one with John A Davenport with at Energy Focus. And we named things on our show. So that theme is called First Do No Harm. So because we had solved the Flickr problem with electronic fluorescence, and we've kind of reintroduced it on a mass scale with LED. And it's a very serious problem, LED flicker, in that a large portion of the deployed technology is not IEEE 1789 standard compliant, or whatever you call it. So flicker is something that we know is bad. So it's not good, but it's like if you, flicker is like a do no harm situation. And then I know that for sure that exposure to daylight is good. Tell me about the evidence you have that demonstrates that you can recreate circadian friendly artificial lighting and that it actually works.
You've touched upon a couple of things there. Daylight is good, yes. Daylight has mental and physiological benefits. The reason that everyone loves daylight is because it's been associated with a reduction in stress. Having a great view helps with productivity. On the other hand, for circadian entrainment, we are talking about the physiological be benefits. So let's remove the mental health aspect of it. Let's remove all the positive productivity aspects of it. It does have an impact on mental health. It does have an impact on productivity, but it's because it's physiologically
Right, but you're talking
associated.
about natural daylight now, not artificially created circadian friendly lighting.
So I'm going to come to
Okay,
the
cool.
circadian friendly light. So the reason that circadian friendly light was introduced is, truthfully speaking, right now in a lot of offices, people don't have access to windows. The light levels have gone down substantially because of energy codes. Everyone's trying to do the bare minimum. There's this excuse that everybody seems to fall back on, saying that everybody's working on screens, you don't need enough light. And then you go back home and you switch on the TV, right? Or I sit in front of my 60-inch TV that my husband insisted on buying. But because of that difference or that contrast that's there between day and night, your body doesn't know when it's day, when it's night. You are not forced to step out of the office. You're not for once you get into the office, there's no reason to go out until it's dark. And that kind of ends up having our body in a confused state, which is where the circadian lighting element came into play. So currently we have requirements for about 150 EML and 240 EML. And that's mainly because you need that light level just to let your body know that it's daytime. It's nowhere close to how much we would get if we step out. It's nowhere close to how much light we'll have if you take a walk in the park or if you decide to work outside for a day. But it does create that contrast that we need between night and day to let our body know, hey, this is daytime, you need to wake up and kind of help with the circadian entrainment.
Okay, so what I'm asking though is, can you simply apply more artificial light to a indoor space and have it? Do we have proof, or is it just the thinking that hey, because you go outside and there's more lux from the sun outside than you would get inside? Is it anecdotal that you're assuming that more artificial light is good, or is there a study
Yes,
that
of course.
proves that, hey, if you blast somebody with 100 lux, it will at noon and then lower it or something like that, that this
Yes,
will
of course.
actually help with their circadian rhythm?
There are several studies. There are several studies, and I can share them with you. But there have been studies where people have been put in rooms at night and exposed to light, and then their circadian rhythms have shifted. There have been studies where people have been put in rooms for continuous days, and then they're exposed to light at specific times, and their circadian rhythms have been tracked. Yes, there are studies showing that the light exposure at different times of the day has an impact on your circadian rhythm, on your
Using
sleep,
artificial light.
using artificial light, using
Wow.
electric light.
Wow, that's new. Greg.
So yeah, as far as the buildings go, or you have those different features, those 10, I think you call them concepts of light and nourishment and all that. Is do you have to meet a certain level and within each, or do you have to meet a portion of each in order to be qualified as a well? Sorry, what do you actually call it when you're qualified
We call it well
or certified?
certified.
Certified.
Yes, that's a great question. So we require now, depending on the version that you follow, you do need to hit a certain number of points, or you do need to meet certain features before you can even qualify to be well certified. So depending on the number of points you achieve or the number of features you decide to pursue, you can get well certified silver, well certified gold, or well certified platinum. So well, as you can imagine, similar to LEED, well certified platinum is when you have achieved 80 plus points. Well certified gold is from around 60 to 80, and well certified silver is 50 to 60. So
How many
depending.
points can you get? Sorry, how many points can you get on just lighting? If you did all the lighting to the perfect degree, how
So
many points is that?
For version two, because we wanted to be fair to all concepts, we have capped it. We have capped the maximum number of points you can achieve per concept to 12. You
Okay.
do need to, there are our features are divided into preconditions and optimizations. You need to achieve all preconditions across all concepts, and you need to achieve a certain number of optimizations per concept. So that means that you're achieving certain features across all concepts, and you're also achieving a certain number of optimizations across all concepts. But you can choose to max out on however many concepts you want to.
And do you feel that all of these concepts, or with every concept, is there a cost associated, or are there low cost options that anyone can do and should do that also get you points for this?
So we've been trying to be very mindful of the equity portion of it. That was one of our kind of leading goals when we worked on V2. We want to make sure that a project in India, a project in China, or a affordable housing project can achieve these requirements. So we have tried to take into account different situations and make sure that it's achievable or feasible for those projects to achieve. Now, of course, there are these requirements which require you to refer to a nutritionist. That's an added cost, but it is important because of the health impact that it has. It's not something that a project team would take into consideration under any circumstance, but because it's required, it would be an added cost. But the health impact would be much higher. I think it's justified.
Okay, so,
Is
oh, go ahead, Greg. You finish up because I
yeah, I was
got
going to say,
my mind is spinning
okay.
here right now.
Yeah, slow it down. Is every commercial building really in the world able to be well certified? Do they have that capability, or are there buildings that you just can't do it?
I would hope not. I would hope that every single building can achieve WELL certification if they try. So if there's a building, if there's a space with no windows, if they implement electric lighting that have the circadian impact that we need, yes, they can get WELL certified. But as is, I would think no. But we want to believe that we have we, they can it is achievable. They can take steps to get there.
Can I talk now?
You go ahead. You go ahead. Jump in.
Okay.
Get after it.
You're going to have to excuse my skepticism on this, okay? And it's not that I don't believe you, but we've interviewed other people on the health effects of lighting, and largely they have told us that nothing is definitive right now, and that we're really just in the exploratory phase of improving circadian photobiology using artificial light. And that there's been no double-blind surveys or studies done where they could prove causationally that circadian rhythms and photobiology were improved using artificial light. You have multiple studies that prove this.
So, Greg, I think yes, but what the main argument or the main confusion that has been is the light levels itself. So we don't honestly, we are still in very, very early stages of defining what the metrics should be. I'm honestly waiting with bated breath the day CIE or IES comes out and they have a standard that says, hey, we've all agreed and this is the metric that it should be. We are talking to experts, we are talking to people, but we still don't know what the metric should be, what the thresholds should be. We don't have research on that. We don't have papers on that. And I know what your next question is going to be. It's like, how did you guys reach that threshold, right?
That's
Am I
right.
reading your mind now?
You kind of are pretty good.
So we spoke to experts. We spoke to very well-known experts before we reached this particular threshold.
Which experts did you speak to?
I would need to revisit our contracts and make
Okay.
sure that I can tell you who
Okay.
the
All right.
experts
Very
are.
good. Okay. Fine.
But I can. I came on board last year. I'm a pretty.
Sure, I get it. I
I'm
get it.
not. I'm not easy to convince. So, yeah, big. Pretty well-known experts, and these thresholds have all been vetted by them.
Okay.
The metrics have also been agreed by them. So, like I mentioned earlier, there is a lot of discussion about the metrics used, basically because of the photobiological receptors that they are hitting. Are we just going to talk about IPRGCs? Are we going to ignore the cones and rods? Do we know enough to
Yes.
say which one's important? So things like that, yeah, they should be talking about. And I do, and I would like to selfishly think that Well has brought it to the forefront. Everybody is mad because someone's put it out there, and it's great because everyone's discussing it, and maybe we'll get something out of
Of
it.
course,
But the
yeah.
truth is, there are so many people who are working, like I mentioned, in offices without windows. The truth
Yes.
is, there are millions of people out there, and we are just going to be know enough to know that there should be an impact. There should be some level of light. We know enough what the minimum level of light is, and we are just going to sit there and wait for the metrics to be formally agreed upon. So
Yeah,
I've
but sometimes there's unintended consequences, right? I mean,
yes.
so like I'm always so here's the thing. And this is what's interesting. This is the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast. You have two guys that go out every day and sell people lighting systems. That's what we do. We stand in front of the customer and we say, you should do this to save energy. You should do this to save on maintenance. And whenever it comes to the health effects of lighting, I always step back and I go, yes, daylight is good. Yes, don't have a flickering lighting system. Those two things are 100% good. We know that. But when it comes to other things, and I feel like we're on a little bit of a slippery slope when it comes to definitively saying this is good and this is better than this. And a lot of times too, I experience clients who the first thing they do when we do a retrofit is take the bulbs out because they want to work in the dark. Like we have clients that room, yes. That will, Greg knows
Designer.
exactly what
That's
I'm
like
talking
my
about.
nightmare.
Yes, like we have to, like we'll put in light fixtures. So we'll do a job and we'll take out a whole bunch of fluorescent troffers and we'll just assume that those four in the back corner are burned out. And then we get a call from the customer saying, no, I can't take the bulbs out of this fixture because it's an LED flat panel. And I need it turned off right now because I want to sit in the dark and stare at my screen. And as a guy who sells lighting to the end user, my opinion on the health effects of lighting, other than flicker and daylight, more daylight is good. Flicker is bad. is whatever light you want, man. You're gonna pay that invoice.
I worked with the lighting manufacturer when LEDs first came out. So that was a hard sell, but I think I can agree with you. It's like, okay, whatever you want, just make sure that you're happy. You know, you touched upon a very interesting point. A lot of the complaints that we receive are, the space is just too bright. Like, what do you guys think you're doing? And it's also something that we've been conditioned, right? We faced a similar problem with one of our air features, wherein we say, you cannot open windows if the air outside is bad. You shouldn't do that. It's not good for your lungs. And we have proof that it's not good for your lungs. But then we have project teams, and we have people coming back and saying, hey, but are you going to take away the right to open windows? I mean, it's a cultural thing. If you go to Bombay, and you know how bad Bombay pollution is, and if I tell my aunt that she can't open her window, she will be up in arms. Sure. So it's a cultural thing. It's something that we've grown up, that we've been conditioned to do, but it's something that we need to start talking about, start having education about. The more you know, now, if I know that the air outside is so bad that it's going to impact my lungs, I will think twice before opening the window. If I have a sensor there that tells me that, hey, you shouldn't open the windows right now, the air is not that great, I will think twice. So one of the things that we try to do is create education. This could be something as simple as telling people to take walks, take micro breaks. That helps with mental health, that helps with your fitness or your movement goals, your cardiovascular health. It'll also help you get enough daylight if you take a 30-minute walk. So get enough daylight exposure. So we try our best to create small steps in our goal of market transformation. But again, at the end, it's not an easy change, because we're so used to a certain way of life that if somebody takes it away from us, we're just going to be like, you don't have the right to.
Yeah, nobody wants to be dictated from an Orwellian ivory tower. But I might go off topic, Greg. I know Greg's going to look at me, don't do it, but I'm going to ask you another question here, just related to this. So if natural light is so good for us, why do people wear sunglasses all the time?
So natural light is good for us, yes, but how much is glare good for us? How much... like, do we want to get into that? If I can't go out without sunglasses, I'll be down with a migraine. I'll be sitting in a quiet room and yelling. So it's a balance. Natural light is good for us, but how much comes through in those sunglasses? Through those sunglasses, we don't know. But I know that there are a lot of very intelligent people out there who are finding out, and I'm waiting for all that.
Sure, I hear you. I hear you. You know what? I am some people are like, kind of like, oh man, you know, he's asking tough questions, and I don't know the answer. That's okay if you don't know the answer. I mean, I don't know the answer either. I think there's a lot of people say, you know, it starts as this health effects of lighting thing always starts off with the conversation. Well, we evolved outside, and we've been living outside for, you know, as humans for 200,000 years. And before that, 6 million and all this sort of stuff. And elephants don't wear sunglasses, and neither do chimpanzees. And, you know, so, you know, why are humans badly affected by the sun? Why are humans the only animals that have to put on sunscreen? Lighting is such a funny thing. What's that?
Yeah, and everyone, and that's interesting. I'm sorry to interrupt you.
Yeah.
It's also everyone's kind of perspective, no? Like, when I was telling Michael earlier that I grew up in Dubai. I'm used to a certain level of light, and that's intense. So for me, I'm used to that. I need it. When I did my master's in Stockholm, so spent winter there, barely survived it, and when the sun came out, it was not enough for me. Like, I'm used to a certain level of heat. I'm used to a certain level of light level. It's also that our bodies have evolved, no? So if you have, there has been some really interesting research about your eye color and how much light you can withstand, or how your structure is created. It's based on your conditions. So there are so many interesting ways, and light is not the only thing. There are so many interesting variables. And now with I'm in New York. I'm in a completely different scenario. Again, back to the winters that I had
Not
promised
as bad as
myself.
Stockholm, though.
I had promised myself that I will not put myself through winters like that. And then we
Yeah.
had the bomb cyclone. It's something that we have personal preferences. There are physiological things that we are used to, and there are also cultural things that we are
Sure.
used to. So there are so many things that we need to take into account.
So if I'm a building owner, I understand that I want to, make my building better for the occupants in there, but what is my incentive for being a well-certified building?
Okay,
Is there any
so
financial incentive, anything like that? That's what I'm looking at.
financial incentive is increase in productivity, happier occupants, and decrease in stress levels, and thus decrease in sick days. So there's this thing that we discussed. The mind concept is my next favorite concept apart from light, and we have a lot of these discussions. It's called presenteeism, wherein you're here, but your mind is somewhere else. So
I have a big
that's
problem with that.
those hour-long meetings, hour and a half-long meetings that can be solved with an email. Our founder has one of those cups that says this meeting could have been an email, but I digress.
Yes.
There are so many things that impact productivity. There's actually my colleague who has transitioned out. He wrote the AIR concept. He's done some very interesting work on if you sit in one place, you've got a lot of particulate matter around you, and that increase in that particulate matter. So if you have a whole bunch of people sitting in a room talking, the amount of carbon dioxide increases, right, in the room. That decreases your cognitive abilities. That makes you more sleepy. So things like that that you don't even think about has an impact on your productivity. So that would be
But
your incentive.
you can't really define that though. That's the hard part. I mean,
So
us
we
being in
work.
sales, we're used to saying, here's what you're gonna, here's what you're
Yeah.
gonna. This is just
Again, this is
saying,
the efficiency, and this is
yeah.
the this these are the savings over 20 years because of lifespan.
Sure.
Yeah, we don't we're working on that. We have even though Well was released in 2014, you can imagine the project life cycle, how long it takes to actually get a building up and running, certified, takes time. So we are going back into the buildings that we have certified. We have post occupancy surveys. We're conducting surveys. We're conducting case studies, the research there to understand what the fiscal impact is. But from verbal conversations, from emails, from surveys that we have received, it has been overwhelmingly positive. Regarding the numbers, I hope to have something for you very soon. I know that we're almost near the end of one of our business case studies, but it'll take time because it's not as black and white as energy efficiency. We're talking about people and their health. We may not even see an impact till years down the line.
So now you guys have done version one in 2014 when you kicked it off, and then version two is that 2018? Is that when that launched?
That's right.
Okay, and are you planning every 4 years? Is there going to be an advancement in this, do you feel?
The way the last year has gone, I would hope not. We were buried underneath. But we released a version 2 pilot, which is basically we provided a beta version for project teams to play around. They can tell us what their feedback is. And after we've received all the feedback and after we've kind of honed and evolved Well V2 pilot, we'll graduate it into Well V2. So that's when the graduated standard will be out. But we don't have any plans of updates yet. We will be conducting regular updates through our quarterly addenda cycle. We'll also be introducing pilot features. So when there's a hot trend or when there's some research out there, some of the concept leads, the people who are leading the other concept have left certain controversial topics to the side. They'll address it once we have a chance to touch base with our advisors, which are a group of experts each concept has. So we'll be adding in features, we'll be adding in functionalities, we'll be evolving it. So it'll be a growing standard or a growing rating system.
No, I see this from your website. I'm not going to make you memorize it, but it says you have 935 well projects with 175 million
Oh,
square feet.
you reached 935. Great.
Yeah, in 35 countries. So, is there one country or one region you're much heavier concentrated in, or is it broad and even throughout?
China is actually leading. We've had immense interest from projects in China. We've got a wonderful team out there who work with teams in China. They've been so open to, well, again, I think everyone's very aware of the air quality issues. They're very aware about having good quality air indoors. So China has definitely been our number one uptake or a number one adopter. Australia has been wonderful as well. We have projects in UK, in the US, of course, and we have projects in Europe. Of course, that's not to say that there are 30 something other countries, but these
Correct.
have been the main places where people have been adopting on a mass scale.
Okay.
Ooh, so yeah, it's interesting. I think that there's various degrees of development within the 10 areas. Some of the areas would be far more advanced, like air quality you can measure flat out, right? Or can you? I don't mean, I mean, we don't want to get this to the lighting show, but I mean, there's
So
certain things you
I'm
can
glad that this
measure.
is not an error. Well, yeah, yes and no. There
So
is a
it's a, yeah, go
lot
ahead,
of
go ahead.
discussion about what sensors you should use. So yes, we're trying our best to do what we have with information that's out there.
Okay, cool. Whew, that was a good podcast. What's the WELL Building Standards website?
It's wellcertified.com.
Well certified.
Like
I like the
visiting.
name. I gotta say that well certified really rings off the tongue real nice.
It does, doesn't it? There's also, can I plug in? There's also the
Sure.
BuildWell app on the App Store. It's my favorite thing. So
Okay.
if you download it on the App Store, you can access the standard or the rating system, but you can also access the wellographies, which I mentioned earlier. So all
Okay.
the research that we have done, you can read through it, and if you find something interesting, if it means that you switch off the TV earlier, then it's a good thing for us.
I just listened to the Get a Grip on Lighting podcast over and over.
I promise to
All the
listen to
entertainment.
the Get a Grip on Lighting, and you can read the
There you go.
All right. Well, thank you very much for coming on the show.
Thank you. Thank you for
Sure.
having me. This is really enjoyable.
I enjoyed it
Good.
as
Thank
well.
you.
Who, man? Lumax Lighting. Go to LumaxLighting.com, baby. LumaxLighting.com. You know, Greg, the selection of Lumax at LumaxLighting.com is really unbelievable, especially that CNR light, the aisle light. Tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, so it's a specific or light meant specifically for aisles, and it gives you anywhere from 7,000 up to 33,000 lumens, and anywhere from about 150 to 170 lumens per watt. Guiding the light where you need it is important in any application, and especially if you're going to be lighting an aisle, pick the right fixture, and this looks like the right fixture to me.
Yeah, you know, Lumax has such a huge selection of different fixtures. I think that CNR light's got a sensor on it too. And, you know,
It has
aisles
the
are such,
capability. Yep.
yeah, such a great application for occupancy control. It's probably, I would say that most rack aisles are probably the number one simplest application to deploy lighting controls. And wouldn't you say, Greg?
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. They're not always being used, so why not turn them off when they're not?
And if you got to do that, you got to go to lumaxlighting.com. That's LumaxLighting.com, baby. And they got great a ton of products there. Check them out. This episode of the podcast and every episode that you see on the GetAGripOnLighting.com website is sponsored officially by the National Association of Innovative Lighting Distributors. Go to NAILD.org, man. NAILD.org to join the association that Get a Grip on Lighting co-host and co-host are members of. Also, while you're on the website, quickly to open another tab, go to YouTube. Type in Get a Grip on Lighting podcast and subscribe to our podcast, man. We need to get 100 subscribers so we can get our own channel name there on the top. So it says youtube.com/getagriponlighting. So go to YouTube and subscribe to us. Hey, don't be afraid to write a review on iTunes or on our website or on Google Play or wherever you listen to this podcast because it's available in a ton of spots. And thank you to Gayatri Unnikrishnan from the WELL Building Standard. Fantastic time. We had a good fun, Gayatri. We really enjoyed having you on. and informing us about how, you know, there's people out there that are measuring and looking at how to make buildings healthier and helping us understand it from a lighting perspective. Thanks for listening, folks. Episode 37, Get a Grip on Lighting.
Written on the rectory wall, there's a sign there for all. You are lost, the Lord is there to find you.